Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Janine Gagliardi.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good. It feels like forever. It feels like we haven't done this in a really long time.
It has been a long time, right? There's been so much stuff. 2021 has been a hell of a year for this podcast.
I know.
But you just had a few good segments on the Starter Pack episode.
I did. I was very happy. I am.
Yeah. So today we are going to talk about best fights in movies, unless you have one from a TV show. All mine are from movies.
Mine would probably be something like Buffy, but
Best fights in movies. This was harder. It was a fun idea that you came up with, but it was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Because first I was like, oh, a few immediately pop into your head.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And we decided to do five each. Mm-hmm. So I got like two immediately. And then I was like, wait. Mm-hmm. And then I picked some were in for a day and then I took them out. Mm-hmm. And then some were like, I'm trying to question the definition of a fight. Like,
okay.
If one person's beating the shit out of another, does that count as a fight?
Right. Okay.
If it's a battle, is it a fight?
So let's get into that. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to just start with that? Because I included a beating as an honorable mention because it's not really a fight. One of the participants does not fight back really. They just get a beating. And I love it, but it's not a fight necessarily.
Right. It's violence registered on film.
Yeah.
But it's not a fight.
It's not really a fight.
Well, I have two honorable mentions and one of them is like that, where one person really just beats the shit out of another. Mm-hmm. And then the other is a fight, but it's like 3 seconds long. It's like a and it's over.
Okay. And then one of the things that I sent you is not really a fight. It's like a chase that ends.
Yeah.
And I've always thought of that, but I never knew how to categorize it really. Like, I guess it's a fight. I don't know. And then the battle thing, you brought up the Battle of Hogwarts because it's like, what did I say? You asked me if a battle was, and I was like, I wouldn't include the Battle of Helm's Deep, but if you wanted to do like,
movie.
Right, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or the Battle of Hogwarts is like the whole movie. If you wanted to do like a smaller fight within that battle,
yeah.
Like if you wanted to do like Éomer versus the Witch King in Return of the King, you could do that for sure.
Yeah. Let me think. Looking at my list, two were battles and three are one-on-ones.
Okay. One is definitely a battle in mine. Oh, one-on-ones. But like,
yeah.
How many people do you need for a battle? Just more than two?
Well, one of mine, I'm calling it a battle, but it's one on like 10.
Okay.
Which I'm sure you have something like that on your list too. Also, let's say that, and I make this caveat only because whenever we do a list, like inevitably we record it and then like the next day I'm like, oh, I forgot this very obvious thing.
Well, this is a good opportunity for, you know, people on Instagram or any of the social media platforms, like, weigh in, tell us.
Yeah, please. Because I might be like, yes, you're right. That should have been on my list.
Well, there's others that like I was trying not to do looking at too many lists that already exist.
Yeah,
of
me
fights.
Too.
But then when I would go on, I love all those fights, but almost none of my fights are on there.
Yeah.
And I like those fights a lot, but I'm sort of like, well, maybe we could do, maybe this isn't the best movie fights. Maybe this is just like movie fights we really enjoy.
Right.
But people don't talk about them so much. I don't know.
The episode will be called Best Movie Fights because it looks good on iTunes.
Yep.
But could also call it, I could call my list Fights I Thought of Today. And tomorrow I might have a whole different list.
Yeah.
Like there's maybe one, probably the most obvious one on my list that would always be on my list. But then the rest are just like, you know. And I like them for different reasons. Some of them I realize are on my list not because they're that great fights, but because like there's dialogue going on during the fight that I find interesting.
Okay. I think there's a lot of different good reasons to like fights. Like I think the gamut of the fights that I sent you ran from really brutal, which, you know, I'm not really into over-the-top violence for, I don't know, various
number
of reasons.
You get enough of that in your life.
In my life, please. Please. I have two little boys who bite me on a daily basis. I don't need
little
it anymore.
Little gremlins.
They really are. So, no, I don't need that. But, like, I don't necessarily watch movies to see, like, brutal violence, but there's one that's pretty brutal. And then the other one is, like, a really comedic fight.
Yeah, I have a comedic one, too. So do you have an order to yours?
I don't really have like a ranked list.
Okay.
But I'll mix it up in terms of like tone of the fights, I guess.
Okay.
Or like type of fights.
All right. So please just kick us off.
Okay. So I'm going to, oh gosh, I was like, wait, do I have six? Oh no. Oh no, I do have six. All right. I'm going to go backwards. All right. I'm going to start with the brutal ones. We get it out of the way.
Sure.
So the Alabama versus Virgil, I had to look up his name. It's Patricia Arquette versus James Gandolfini. The fight you've always wanted to see.
Yeah.
In True Romance, which is a movie, it's a Tony Scott movie.
Yeah. I love it.
I love it too. It's written by Quentin Tarantino. I think Reservoir Dogs either came out right before or right after, but like
I think right after. I think some of the money from selling that script he used to make it.
Because it was like very, he simultaneously got big for like both movies.
It also was like a set with Natural Born Killers, which you can see that a little bit if you read between the lines, because some of the way that the characters act are very brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Although Tony Scott, I think, really washes it down and makes it not too Tarantino-y, and I mean that in the best possible way.
I mean that too. I like seeing Tarantino in another director's hands.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a really big strength of the movie, because it has all those Tarantino quirks, but not necessarily his like over, you know, his
right.
Like
the script was not in chronological order. Mm-hmm. Tony Scott was like, we're going to do it in order.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was about to say overwrought directing style.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I like Quentin Tarantino's movies a lot. I have I guess I have two Quentin Tarantino fights on here. But in any event, so Alabama, Patricia Arquette is a sex worker who falls in love with Christian Slater's character, Clarence, who's like he's a comic book nerd, Elvis fan. Totally not what you would expect from an action movie lead.
Yeah.
And she wants to leave the life behind. So he goes to confront her pimp, I guess the word would be, in a very not okay performance by Gary Oldman. I love him. He was like a white Rasta. It was weird.
Yeah.
In any event, he takes what he thinks is a suitcase full of her clothes. It's actually a suitcase full of cocaine. The mob gets involved. They come after them. And James Gandolfini is the mob enforcer.
Yeah.
Patricia Arquette returns to the hotel room they've been staying at, and he goes to get burgers, and James Gandolfini is waiting for them, for her, I guess. And he's asking where the cocaine is, and she refuses to tell him. And then it proceeds with a pretty brutal beating.
Yes.
Of Patricia Arquette, who is a petite woman, by James Gandolfini, who is like he's a big dude.
Right.
And he is not holding back. He's just beating her mercilessly. Right. But she's still refusing to tell him anything. And I'm having not seen the movie, when I watched it for the first time, I just had this sinking feeling like I'm about to watch her die.
Right.
And it's not going to end well. And I was like, I don't want to watch this character get beaten to death. Like, this is
it's pretty
awful.
Visceral. Especially when it's a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And Yuri's not holding back.
Mm-hmm. And her, like, and they don't hold back on the makeup effect either.
Right,
not like
right.
She has, like, a couple of, like, light cuts and, like, pretty. You know, like, they do pretty
right,
makeup.
Right, right. No, she looks pretty fucked
she
up.
Looks messed up. Like, one of her eyes is, like, completely shut. Like, her lips are screwed up.
Right.
So it's bad. And
it's chaotic, which is what Tony Scott's good at. Just total like noise and chaos and just clutter.
Glass breaking, the mirror breaks, like he throws her up against
right,
the
tons
mirror.
Tons of cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's just like the hotel room is completely trashed. And you know, she keeps trying to hold him off, I guess, in the sense that she's not giving in, even though he keeps torturing her basically, and she knows she's gonna die. She holds up a corkscrew.
Yeah.
And she holds it out in front of her.
Right when he's about to like finish her off.
He's gonna
too.
Kill her basically at
right.
that point.
And it's like one last like I'm trying.
Yeah,
something.
And he's playing with her. Like it's right. like he's playing with his food. He knows she has no
right.
chance against
right.
him.
But he's like, you got a lot of heart.
Yeah, she keeps telling her that too. Because when she gives him the finger, he's like, you got heart, kid, and then punches her in the face. Like it's really bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she holds up this corkscrew and he's like, you got heart, and because of that, I'm going to let you get like one shot. And he's like, give me your best shot. And he like holds his shirt open.
Yeah.
And then she takes the corkscrew and she drives it into his foot. Yeah. Which is like the best move she could have done, because right. it's super vulnerable, and that he didn't expect
it. And he screams.
He screams, and then he takes her and throws her through the like glass shower door. So then it's like, oh, now he's really going to kill her. The shower's on, right. like the water's on for some reason. It's chaotic.
Right. And it cuts back and forth to Clarence going to get them food,
right,
which builds some tension and creates some sort of temporal ellipses, so you kind of like, you don't know how exactly long it's all taking,
right,
because you'll jump back and it'll be like the chaos is still unfolding. Mm. It's like in media res,
and the color scheme when he's like ordering, it's all like pinks and yellows and reds, and he's talking to the guy like at the burger place about Elvis
burger, and it's like it's all very indulgent. Everything is indulgent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So he's going to kill her in the shower, and he's bleeding, though, from the head. I guess he got cut somehow. And she starts laughing at him and saying, like, you look ridiculous. So then he takes a moment and looks at himself in the mirror and then attacks her. And while he's doing that, she grabs some shampoo in her hand and, like, rubs his eyes with it. So now his eyes are burning. Then she jumps out of the shower, and this is sort of like an action move on her part, because there's a scene where she like jumps out of the bathroom and it's clearly like a stunt person. She lights his head on fire using a bottle of aerosol hairspray and a lighter. And then at this point, he's on fire.
Yeah.
And then she jumps on him and like stabs him in the back with the corkscrew yet again, and then grabs his gun and finishes him. And she... It's like the ultimate comeback.
Right. And after he's already dead, she kind of goes wild.
She goes wild.
Which is where you see
like
a little bit of natural born killers. And also, I think a pretty clear...
It's like
clear...
a sawed-off shotgun. She just keeps shooting him over and over again, even though he's dead.
And then she shakes it above her head, which I see as a very clear homage to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, okay.
The way at the end, he holds the chainsaw above his head.
Mm. And she's been so strong this whole time.
Yeah.
And she completely breaks down at the end. And Clarence at that point like rushes in because he's hearing gunshots in his room.
Right.
And she's just a brutal.
But what about
mess.
The speech? There's like a little speech in the middle of it where he's talking about the first time he
killed somebody. Yeah.
And it's fucking intense.
It is.
He's basically saying he's his mob guy. And he's basically like, you know, we kill people for a living, but that first one is always hard. You always remember your first kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking intense.
It's a very Tarantino speech, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
And he basically says like he doesn't feel anything anymore when he does it.
Yeah.
And it's very like Iceman. Like I felt like I don't know if this is the same time as the Iceman. It was like before the Iceman was arrested. But it was very much like he's just done it so much that it doesn't even mean anything to him.
Yeah, yeah. So what about this fight is interesting to you?
It surprised me. I didn't think she was going to survive at all. And so it was one of those few moments in a movie where it's like, oh my God, yeah, she's going to do it. Like I kept getting a little bit of hope and thinking the hope was going to get taken away from me, cause not knowing what to expect. I thought, this is just going to be, you know, a bad ending. It's going to be grim. And every time the hope was rewarded, and then it kept being rewarded, and then like bigger and bigger and bigger, and she keeps gaining power in little ways. Like it starts with this corkscrew, and then it goes to shampoo, and then it goes to she has got a bottle of hairspray, and then she brings back the corkscrew, but then she has the gun, and so she's like gaining little objects that she can use against him.
And she has a few good hits. Like she hits him over the head with
Toilet tank too. The top of the toilet tank.
He takes a lot of abuse too during it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It's and I should we say like the thing that shocked me when I first saw it was he's sort of leering at her sexually, and she's a beautiful woman. But within the diegesis of the movie, everyone sort of sees her as this beautiful, like, light.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you are so beautiful. And then he's like, can you turn around for me? Like, do a spin for me?
Mm-hmm.
Which she kind of, like, doesn't want to do, but she's kind of, like, playing coy with
him. She's, like, nervous laughing. She's like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And
then she turns around, and as she's, like, coming back around, he punches her in the face.
Yeah.
And it's such a shock.
Yeah.
And this is I don't know if it's his first movie, but this is, like, one of the first juicy roles for James Gandolfini, and you see like a prototypical like Tony Soprano in it a little bit, like those
I feel like
moments.
It's like what he used to do, like it's his backstory.
Right.
If he survived the scene,
right, right. It's those moments where like, and I only watched like I guess half of Sopranos, but like those moments where he would get crazy, like just brutal, like and despite being slow and lumbering, like all of a sudden he would just seem like a big, huge,
menacing guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's very good in it. Like, he's just, you could tell right away this is a very good actor.
Yeah, yeah, he's great in it.
And he's always been the same age.
Yeah, sure. He's always been.
He's always been that age.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. My first one is from the 2013 Snowpiercer movie. And it's directed by Bong Joon-ho. So if you've never seen Snowpiercer, it's a post-apocalyptic future where a nuclear winter kills everyone except some rich guy who's like, I guess, kind of like Elon Musk kind of figure. He makes a big, huge train. And the train literally goes all around the entire world, just circle. Like, I think it takes a year. So I think, like, it makes a full rotation in a year. It's like a perfect, like, metaphor for capitalism, because at the very front of the train, there's a lot of room, there's beautiful gourmet food, there's beautiful music, and then, like, the further you get down on the train, it's like they're eating bugs, and it's just they're living in complete squalor. And the main character is Chris Evans in one of his best roles. Come for me, Marvel fans. He is in the back, and he's like this revolutionary, and he's like, he makes this plan, and he's like, we're gonna storm. We're gonna storm all the way through, go up from the back into the front, and get Wilfred, the man who, like, is our god, the man who's controlling everything, and we're gonna create equality. So they get to the fight, which is pretty brutal, is they get to a point. He starts off with, like, a little army, and they make it into, like, one or two cars above the car in the very back. And so now they've been noticed. So, like, the bad guys' forces from the front come back, and they're fully militarized and everything. And remember, they're on a train, and they're about to go in a tunnel, a long tunnel, which will make it pitch black. So it's like this moment of, like, everybody's nervous, because the minute it turns dark, the bad guys all have night vision goggles, and the good guys don't have anything. They're, like, literally in rags and have, like, shivs.
Yeah.
And then they're like, so there's this moment of tension, and then, like, they go into the tunnel and it's dark, and then the film cuts to the perspective of the goggles, and you just see, like, the good guys, like, literally just in the dark, like, swipe it at nothing, and then the bad guys are just easily just brutally murdering them. And then Chris Evans calls for, there's a little kid that he, like, befriends who lives in the back with him, who, like, plays with matches. I forget exactly what his thing is with matches. And he's like, I need fire. And the little kid makes a torch, it's almost like a relay race. He runs up, and then another person grabs the torch, and then there's more torches. And then eventually, like, in the darkness, you see from the point of view of the goggles, all of a sudden it's like the green of the night vision gets sort of blown out, because you see there's just a bunch of people with fucking torches. And then the good guys, like, a lot of them will have, like, a torch in one hand and, like, a knife in the other. And they'll, like, stab you with the knife, but they're also hitting people with the torches.
The torch.
So there's, like, these embers everywhere, and it's fucking chaos, and it's beautiful. And the bad guys are like, oh, shit. And they're they take Tilda Swinton in one of her craziest roles, plays, like, she's very Umbridge. She plays, like, the, like, lady who is the secretary of everything, and she speaks for Wilfred, and they take her hostage, and it's just it's a battle, and it's brutal, and it's beautiful, and it is really, really, it's visceral, it's really good. Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, I watched the scene because you sent it to me for the first time, because I haven't seen Snowpiercer, and I loved the transition from, like, the cold green light to, like, this warm, like, orange light of the fire. Like, they have nothing to lose, you know? Right. And it's like the desperation of people who have nothing to lose. Because she says, she tells them, you're, in a very, like, Han Solo moment, Chris Evans doesn't wait for her to finish her speech. He, like, throws an axe at her head. Which doesn't make it. But she's like, you're operating with, like, the hope of the doomed. Something.
And
but
she's,
it's like,
you've been suckling on the teeth of Wilfred for too long. Basically, like, I mean, like, if you're a kind of leftist person, you'll love it, because it's like the proletariat. It's like a battle between the proletariat and the fucking...
It's like the French Revolution is happening on this train.
Exactly. It's and I know there's a TV show based on it now, which I have not seen, sadly, but I could say the film is excellent. And that's just one of many cool action scenes. Mm. And it's the rare action film that's also like extremely thoughtful and like really makes you think about inequality and shit like that.
Bong Joon-ho's just catalog is so cool. His filmography is amazing.
What other stuff does he have?
Oh, well, Parasite. He's the director of Parasite. So, which I haven't seen, but
I have.
I haven't seen any of his movies.
Parasite's really good too.
What I know of him is
four The Host.
Movies.
I've also seen that.
I've seen more of his films than a horror movie.
It's like Godzilla, kind of. Right, yeah.
And then, because that was how he first got on people's radar, was The Host.
It's also one of the best Fuck You Americans, because the bad guys in it are Americans, but he casts, like, cross-eyed yokels to be like, these are the Americans, and it's so good, because it's like, yeah, that's about right.
Oh, my God. And then the other one was Okja?
I'm not sure, the pig baby thing.
It's like a cow pig or something.
Yeah,
and that's about like also environmentalism. And,
yeah,
like,
yeah, he's got a lot to say.
Yeah,
Parasite's really good too. Mm. Parasite's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Now that you're making me remember his other films, he is. Yeah, he's got a cool way of being thoughtful and also like super crowd pleasy.
Yeah, he makes like activist movies that are like sneaky activism movies.
Yeah,
right. Like he does like horror or sci-fi or you know something. It just seems like a have and have nots drama, but now he's like saying all these really big things about the environment and capitalism and like really interesting director. He's very cool.
Yeah, and his first name is the first part of my last name.
Right.
Bong.
Because
I'm Buongiorno.
That's right. That's important.
That's the main reason this is on the list.
That's important to your enjoyment of a film, is how much of your name is in the director's name.
Yes, yes, yes. It's why I like most Michael Mann movies, even though I find him to be a little bit pedestrian. What do you got?
All right. So let's do one. I think this is probably a very well-known fight. I just watched it right as you were getting here to make sure I remembered it, but I've seen it like a ton of times. It's another Quentin Tarantino, so I'll just knock it off my list. I'm going to do, in a movie of fights, pretty much only fights, The Bride versus the Crazy 88 in Kill Bill Volume 1.
Which is the big finale kind of set piece.
The big set piece. The really big set piece. Now, I rewatched it just moments ago and forgot that that's not how she starts the fight. Like, she's already fought Gogo at that point.
Yes.
And some of the other henchmen. Like, she's already, because she's covered in blood already when she starts the fight.
Right. And then after she fights Oranishi.
She fights Oranishi in the garden right after. And then the movie ends pretty much.
Yeah.
Because she's holding her assistant hostage. Right, or she like, no, she like brutalized the assistant a little bit.
Yeah.
I think she cut off her arm. That was it.
Yes.
Yeah. A little bit. She brutalized her. She cut off her whole arm.
I mean, in that movie.
Yeah. Because I feel like it has a very, I'm not very well versed on kung fu movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously making homages to the Bruce Lee films. She's wearing the same tracksuit that he's wearing in, is it Enter the Dragon? Is it? Yeah.
Was that the suit from Enter the Dragon, or was that
the yellow suit? I know about that movie that he wore it because he wanted to mix like Western influence and Eastern influence, and he didn't want to dress like a traditional like kung fu martial artist, and he wanted to look modern. I still think it's a fantastic look. I love that she wore it, but
That's like most of Game of Death.
Oh,
it's the Game of Death suit. Most of Tarantino is like, he just lifts things.
Right.
He's not like, I think of him as like a collage artist. It's more than homage. It's like literally like, it's like samples.
That.
It's like sampling in music. Basically, it's all from something else.
Right. Okay.
So, but what about that? Because like you said, it's a film of fight. It's really two films of fights. Like if I had to pick one from that list, I would actually probably not pick that fight. I would probably pick like her and L, like almost on my list, I had her and L Driver.
L Driver is a small space trailer fight.
In the trailer,
it's really tight.
Takes, yeah. So why do you pick? Why did you pick the Crazy 88 fight?
I love the spectacle of it. I love the sound effects. They're all like 70s. It's like the Hulk changing sound effects.
Yeah.
Effects. I like that after showing us, I think we already had the Vernita Green fight in the movie. We already had like major fights. This one, because the Oranishi fight was cool, but it was a really quiet way to end the movie, I think.
Yeah.
This was the big loud bang fight that we're looking for.
Right.
My actual favorite fight from the Kill Bill franchise is the anime Oranishi fight from when she gets revenge for her family.
Right.
That's probably my favorite one. But really, it's not a fight so much as it's just like a killing.
Yeah.
In any event, I like how the fight changes so often. It's like a 9-minute sequence, and
some of it's in silhouette.
Yes, against like a colorful background, and then a lot of it's in black and white. The moment it changes, she like rips out the guy's eyeball, and that sort of is a misdirect. Like they're not going to show you that level of violence, although they do show you that level of violence throughout the rest of the film series. It's almost like they did it so you wouldn't. And then the next movie, you see her rip out an eyeball again. Yeah. So, but that's in color. I like that it's over the top, like over the top blood spurts. She cuts a man in half, vertically.
Yeah,
I forgot that part.
Yeah,
she jumps on a guy's shoulders and fights people from there. I like how the rules of like the gravity defying thing don't apply to everybody. Like some people run up the stairs, some people can fly.
Yeah,
and I think it did. For me anyway, because I know a lot of people love the old Kung Fu movies. I mean, Quentin Tarantino does. That's why he made this series. I find them to be kind of boring sometimes. And sometimes the fights can be a little boring.
I think in general, if there isn't a narrative underpinning, it's boring.
Mm. And I feel like this sort of solved that, where it's like, I like all these things, but I'm going to make it faster paced, and it's going to have like fun music, and it's just going to be kind of
and there was something gonzo narrative there.
Crazy.
It, yeah. And you're getting towards something.
Yes. And she's, and it does the thing that we've talked about on this podcast a lot, which is it feels like a video game. You know, she keeps having to clear levels.
Right. It's like boss fights. Mm-hmm. It's like boss after boss after boss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she spanks the one young...
the one young guy who's just holding in front of him and she cuts his sword down.
She's like, go home to your mother.
She spanks him. Or then her speech at the end, it's like, those of you who are lucky enough to leave with your lives, your limbs belong to me. You have to leave your arms and legs here that I cut off.
I fucking love it. Yeah.
It's a good one. And I feel like it's one of the more cliche ones on my list. It might be the most cliche one on my list, the one that people like...
Well, I think I tried to not look up too many lists of other people's stuff, but I did glance a little bit, and I think it appears on most people's lists.
It's, it's a big spectacle fight.
It's like a good 30. It's like a long time.
It's very long time. I just watched this segment on YouTube, and it was 9 minutes and 22 seconds.
I think it took like 12 weeks. Like it took like a whole film's length of shooting just to shoot that
one part. Sure. And Quentin Tarantino has a story about it because he has a story about everything. And basically he was at Cannes doing the premiere and Keanu Reeves was in the theater watching with everyone else. And he's like, I didn't realize how much The Matrix influenced my making of this movie until I was watching the movie with Keanu Reeves. And then I was like, oh no, this is exactly like when he fights all those Agent Smiths.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, he felt embarrassed at that moment because he felt like he copied it without realizing.
I did not know shame was something Quentin Tarantino could possibly do. But it's better than that because
it is better. I think it's a much better fight. Yeah,
the CG in the Agent Smith fight, which it's some of it's when it was made.
Yeah,
but that's what's cool about Kill Bill is so much of it's practical.
Yeah,
it's just so practical.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you want to talk about this now because we're sort of naturally going into it, but this sort of blends the two things where it's sort of fighting in movies.
Yeah,
and just how that's evolved. Like, I'm thinking of. There's one fight that would show up on these lists from this old Western that I've never seen. But fighting, like stage fighting or fighting in movies used to be like a guy throws a major punch and it's always like over like one punch pretty much. And then that, I feel like, you know, in the 70s, everything changed with film. But then the 70s were like a big time for Kung Fu movies. Right. And it's like really technical skill, Kung Fu. It's very, very cool. And then you'd have these like action stars like Arnold Schwarzenegger like having big fights in Predator and Conan punching a horse. And then I feel like the big watershed moment was The Matrix. and like Bullet Time and those things where I feel like if you watched it, if you were a kid watching it today, you wouldn't necessarily be impressed by it. But at the time, there was nothing like people jumping in the air and then freezing to give somebody a kick in the face. Right. It's so overdone now, but it was the first time you'd ever see something like that.
But I think the first time you've ever seen it in America, because so much of the Matrix is the Wachowskis are taking from kung fu films and anime. I mean, ideologically, it's so much like the anime Ghost in the Shell. Even a lot of the style of it is very much like Ghost in the Shell.
Well, I would say, a lot of the things they're doing because special effects allow them to do it are things you could only ever see in an animated movie. But I feel like, was it the same year Matrix came out as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Oh, I don't remember if it was the same. Because it was all
people flying around and doing things you can't do. And Kill Bill has a little bit of that in this
For sure.
Not too much. They don't really do too much. Like, there are people jumping from, like, the floor level to the second level or, like, her jumping on someone's shoulders. But otherwise, the fights are pretty grounded in reality. Right. Well, not reality. But, you know, they're things people could conceivably do.
No, I think you're... Well, first of all, I think that you're right. Going all the way back, like, some of the early Edison films are just, like, 8 seconds of a boxing match. Like, I think fighting is inherently cinematic from the get-go because there's no talking, there's no nuance. It's one subject hitting another. And you even just looking at it like an old Edison peep show where you just like look at it and it's just like a couple seconds and you're like, oh, that's an interesting novelty. So I think it's always been part of it, of movies. And I think you're right that I think that is a huge moment, what you're talking about. Because I recently watched the channel Corridor Crew on YouTube, which the Corridor Crew is they do they're a company that do VFX, but then they started a YouTube channel where like their first big thing that got them really viral was VFX artists react to good and bad VFX.
Oh, okay.
And like they watch old VFX and new ones and they explain why it's good and why it's bad. Mm-hmm. But then they also, as a spinoff of that, did stuntmen react to good and bad stunts.
Okay.
Where they bring a stuntman on as a guest because they have VFX people. And anyway, they recently did one where they talked about the first training fight between Morpheus and Neo after in the dojo, the white dojo, right after he's like, I know Kung Fu because he downloads it. And
that's probably my favorite one in the movie.
I forgot how good it was. And it just cinematically, it's like perfectly directed. Just the cinematography of it makes so much sense. The camera movements, and they kind of pick it apart. It's a really cool video, it's literally like when I think about the Matrix, that's not the first fight that comes to my mind.
It's always an Agent Smith fight,
right? But like it's kind of perfect. That scene is kind of perfect. So yeah, I think one way to think of the Matrix is a blending of Eastern and Western.
Yeah, I mean, everything copied it after. Like, every media that involved a fight copied it. Like, the Charlie's Angels movie, people were flying around. Buffy had Bullet Time.
Right.
Do you remember that?
They parodied it a lot, too.
She stopped the missile and it turned into a dove. Do you remember that? It was like the Riley storyline.
I blocked all that out.
Riley. I know. But I was just like, oh, they're doing this now? They don't have that same budget. It looks kind of weird.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's also like the one tool in Zack Snyder's tool belt to do, you know, slow-mo, to use slow-mo in that kind of way. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that if it reads to a contemporary audience as like trite, it's only because everyone has taken it from this. Like, this did it.
Yeah.
But interesting. This is actually a South Korean film.
Okay.
Old Boy.
Oh yeah.
Old Boy.
Old Boy and the companion piece Young Man.
Old Boy, from 2003, South Korean film directed by Chan-wook Park.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not. When we were in college, I'm going to be very generous and say we were in college at the same time. We were not.
How dare you? Yes, we were.
Barely. I feel like this was the movie that people who liked movies were talking about.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, but it's all I heard about at the time.
It's pretty brutal. And there's some crazy stuff in it, like the protagonist like eats a lot like a live octopus, and he like really did it.
Why did he also direct Sympathy for Lady Vengeance?
Let's see.
I think there was a film fest.
Lady Vengeance, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't want to get too, the film's full of surprises and it's very weird. I actually once was teaching a film class where I used to do a thing at the end where I'd let the students pick the last film through like, I'd first have them like write suggestions and then based on those suggestions, I would make nominees and then have them vote again. And so they voted for this film. And I think I'd only seen it like once or maybe twice before that. So I was watching it again, and an older student, an older woman, she walked out.
Okay.
At one point.
Mm.
And this was after, for most of the movie, her vocally being like, which...
Can you believe this?
Because it's full of banana stuff. So, but the fight that is on my list is... this incredible fight where just, all right, real quick, the main protagonist is kidnapped and put in like a prison for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, the prison is like, it's not a prison. It looks like a little hotel room, like a shitty hotel room that he can't get out of.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, then one day he's just let out.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of goes on one of these Kill Bill type missions to try to figure out what happened to him or whatever. And he finds the organization that like they provide the service for criminals. Like they run the so-called prison.
That's like prison hotel thing?
Yeah. So first he goes and the guy who like runs the business, he ties him up and he's like, and he's got a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, once he's tied him up, he like duct tapes his mouth open and he's like, I'm going to remove one tooth for every year that you took from me. So he removes 15 teeth from his mouth using the back edge of a hammer.
No.
And I guess at that point they've called the goons. And then he gets down. And this is the big scene where he's in this hallway. And it's shot from the side. So it's almost like looks like a side-scroller video game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this perfect tracking shot. And it's all done in like one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from left to right. And he's got the hammer, that the main protagonist has a hammer, and that's his like weapon. And all these guys have like sticks and chains, and they come at him, and he's just fucking them up with a hammer, but he's getting hit too.
Yes.
And like the, you know, it's like they always, there's always that joke that like, why don't they all attack at once?
Mm-hmm.
And they do though, like they all attack him at once,
stomping him out a couple right. times.
Yeah, at one point he's down on the ground and someone stabs him in the back, and you're like, oh, it's over. And then they go to like grab him and he gets back
like
up.
A horror movie
and,
monster.
Yeah, and he's like fucking them up with like the knife in his back, and then he drops a hammer and he picks up one of their weapons, and like everybody's kind of like, which is what it would be like in real life.
Okay.
You wouldn't, the stamina to fight like that for more than 30 seconds.
You sent this to me, and not having seen this movie, I watched it and I was like, yes, this is what I want. This is what, one of the things I wanted to talk about with you about movie fights in general. Yeah, we love action movies. I like that we have beautiful choreographed fights.
Yeah.
I want to see the skill on screen of a person who knows what they're doing. But I was going to say, you know, often in life, especially if you've, you know, been out to bars, people who are fighting are messy. They miss. It's sloppy.
Right.
They get messed up. Both parties usually get messed up.
Right.
It's not like one, you know, hero and one person is getting beaten. And this, I'm like, I just want to see that on screen. Like, I want to see a terrible fight.
Right.
Not a terrible fight because it's a good one, but it still has these realistic moments.
Well, yeah, the good guy gets out of it.
Yes. But he gets his ass handed to him also. He's multiple
got a knife
times.
In his back.
Oh, my favorite part is when he's hammering their feet.
Yeah.
Because it's just like he's on the ground. He can't get up, but he's got this hammer still. And those are the toesies. And he's going for them.
And like sometimes he misses and he like hits the
you
wall.
You see people miss in this. Yeah. Like, and not accidentally. I think it's very intentionally done that like it's going to be a sloppy fight. So people are taking swings and missing.
Yeah.
He's taking a rest.
Yeah.
At certain points, he's like leaning against the wall.
Right.
And it's not played for comedy. He's just like, it's
and they
survival.
All are, because like typically like, in a real fight, not to say that it's realistic because it's highly stylized, but the way that they're fighting is somewhat realistic.
If
because
if you ever had a hallway's worth of people attack you, this might be how it goes.
I think so, yeah.
Because it's just, first of all, also because if everybody runs at you at once, they're going to get in each other's way,
right,
which they do.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it plays out in this way where you are watching a hero's journey, right? You're watching an action movie, but it's playing out in a really semi-realistic way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sloppy way. It's messy. It's a
everyone's
dirty fight.
Out of breath.
Yes.
Everyone's like moving slow. Because you go really hard first.
Afraid. You see fear in a fight too. Like, not just the like cowering fear of like, oh, he just beat us up, but just the like you can smell the adrenaline in the room. Coming at each other, and sort of, and
it's
backing
very
off.
It's a full shot, so you see all of the figures from toes to the top of their head. Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of like when you see in like Wes Anderson films where you see like a crosshatch. Like, remember like Life Aquatic, you see like the ship and like they're literally like walking.
Oh, yeah. Like you cut off the side of the building.
Right, exactly. It's this perfect like horizontal, literally them just making their way down the hallway. Mm-hmm. And
I feel like the guys are in flip-flops, a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not like these tacked out guys who are in in the Snowpiercer fight, they're all in like military gear. Like,
yeah, these
they're
are just thugs.
Like, one guy's shirtless, like, and not in a muscular way. He's got like kind of a doughy body. He's shirtless. They're literally like in tank tops. Some of them have sweatpants on. Like, I love fantastic. This fight. I'm so happy you showed it to me. I really, really love it.
And then the camera doesn't cut from that image until the very end. It cuts to in front of the protagonist. Mm-hmm. But then you see a long shot behind him of just blood and just people on the floor.
On the floor.
But they're not knocked out.
No, they're just like, oh, God.
Writhing.
Yeah. And then the what's amazing about this shot is an elevator opens at the end of the hallway, and he smiles, and it looks so cool, right? Like, he's smiling. He looks nuts. He's got a hallway full of casualties behind him.
Yeah.
And if you're in the elevator, oh no, oh shit, he just beat this whole hallway full of people. But we saw how he got there, and he had a really hard time.
Yeah.
So it's like he's...
It cuts to the elevator opening.
And everybody just falls out.
And you see them all standing still, but then like the reveal is they fall out, and he's just, I don't know what, he's murdered
them. He beat them all with a hammer,
Yeah, it's so good.
It's so funny.
It's
like unintentionally funny. I don't think it's played for laughs at all, but
it's pretty. It's sick, bro.
Sick. It's fun. But what is this thing about hallway fights? Does it start there? Because I feel like, or tight space fights are another sort of trend of doing fight scenes where, like, I remember when Netflix had the Daredevil series, the hallway fight was the thing people talked about. Like,
really?
Oh, remember the hallway fight? Because you're in a tight space, so you can't really, like, throw a punch necessarily.
Right.
So you have to do things in, like, tight quarters and your movements are smaller.
Maybe that's a really interesting question. I don't know if it starts there.
It's like I feel like it's become something I've seen more often now, a fight in a hallway.
I mean, it's certainly like really interesting.
I think the Marvel movies do it too. Like, I think Black Widow's had a hallway fight in like one of the Iron Man movies or something.
I saw one of the Bourne Identity movies, and I felt like there was a lot of fighting in hallways in that one as well. Yeah, what else you got?
Okay. So let's go to another Kung Fu movie, but this one's fun. I love the movie Kung Fu Hustle.
Mm.
A lot of really great fights.
I've actually never seen this.
Okay. So, but did you see the fight sent you?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
I did.
I don't know how far it goes. Does it go to the end when she's in the car with the guy?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to give you a little backstory. So, Kung Fu Hustle, I think, came out in 2004. He did Shaolin Soccer before he did this movie. And it's... Oh, no, Stephen Chow. It's a martial arts action comedy gangster film.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So this whole movie is like a kung fu gangster movie by way of Tex Avery.
Yeah.
Like, it has Looney Tunes physics.
Yeah.
People will run away and their legs will like just spin.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, and it's very funny. It's a really, really, really funny movie. And it has the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, flying acrobatics. And basically, this very, very small, impoverished neighborhood called the Pigsty.
Mm-hmm.
It gets targeted by the ruling gang in this city. And, because of some slight, that they were like insulted by somebody by the main character, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But they go and they're like harassing these people now. But unbeknownst to each other, even, there are three kung fu masters who live in the pigsty. And they each practice a different form of kung fu. One is like Iron Fist. He has these like metal rings that he has. This other guy practices this other form of martial arts that I can't remember now, of course. But I know that the actor who plays him is a real life Shaolin monk. He's like a 39th generation Shaolin monk who like appears in movies and, you know, does fighting things. But he's a monk himself. He's killed at the beginning of the sequence that I love. I like the harpist sequence.
Yeah.
So the gang has tried to attack the pigsty multiple times already, and they keep getting rebuffed by these three kung fu masters who live there. There's another guy who does things with like a spear, a flying spear, I think he's called. And they're living humble lives. Like, one's a tailor, one's you know, one is like a heavy lifting delivery man or whatever. So the gang brings in a pair of harpists, and they're playing, is it like a dulcimer or something? It's a type of harp that like lays across your lap,
right?
That features in East Asian music, and I don't know the name of the instrument.
Yeah.
In any event, they're like kung fu twins. They show up, and it's very menacing. They reveal themselves that they're here to attack the village, and so the kung fu guys assemble, and they're gonna fight them. But they're just playing a harp like in the middle of
the
road,
right?
And every time they like strum the strings, something's happening, like someone's getting cut in the face, and so they realize these strings, the harp is like throwing knives or
something. I wasn't quite sure how to read that. Was it that like...
Or just the effect air? Of the air was so sharp that it was cutting
it
them?
It was like turning into things?
Yeah. Okay. It's all very like magical, and this is the opposite. Nothing is based in reality. This is like, couldn't be farther from Old Boy. And it's very fast paced, and it goes with the music of the harp. Anyway, I'm explaining it poorly because there's so many like effects happening. People are flying through the air. They're fighting. They're fighting with the harp, essentially. It's like the kung fu master's fighting a harp.
Yeah.
The music of the harp is cutting them up, and
eventually. It reminds me of Avatar, like with airbending.
Oh yeah. That's a good way of putting it. And the fight is speeding up, and they're throwing like more swords and knives or whatever. And as this is happening, the landlord and the landlady keep like opening the shutters.
Yeah.
And like getting involved, and she's yelling things.
Yeah.
And he's covering her mouth and like pulling her back. Like, we don't want any part
of
this.
She's got like rollers in her hair and a cigarette.
She's got a cigarette. She walks around in like house shoes and like a nightgown all the time. She's great. And then it seems like they're going to be killed. The two kung fu masters are going to be killed by the flying things. And I can't remember, the landlord gets involved first.
Yeah.
And he's just magically there with he's also in silk pajamas.
Yes.
Silk pajama set. And he has his arms around them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
It just shows up and his arms are around both of the harpists. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Wait a second. So now they're trying to attack him, but he's like a rubber man.
Yeah.
And he's like super flexible, so he's like a Stretch Armstrong almost. He's just dodging everything they do, and he's like all he's like wiggling his hips.
Yeah.
And then he's taking the two of them and flying around.
It's very dancey. The whole thing's very, I mean, it's all fights are always choreographed, but this has a real like dance element to it.
I mean, the whole movie does. It's called Kung Fu Hustle. It opens with the gangsters. The gangsters dance throughout like a lot of the movie, but it's not a musical. They're dancing while they fight.
Yeah.
So he's moving his hips around and dodging everything that they do, and everything builds. It's always it starts grounded in reality, like you could dodge things, and then it builds to something totally ridiculous. So by the end of this motion, he's holding both of them by the ankles and like spinning them around in a circle, and then he like lets them fly.
Yeah.
And he's like made a yin yang on the ground.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. The whole time also, the gang boss and his like assistant, his like henchman, are watching from a car.
Yeah.
Just outside the boundaries of this neighborhood. And they're like, now we get to see them take out these two kung fu guys, and now everyone's gonna respect this gang in the neighborhood. And they're like pathetic, over the top villains too.
Yeah, sure.
And then as they keep getting beaten back, they're getting more and more pissed off.
Yeah.
Why is the landlord getting involved? We thought we had them. And then they go nuts with the harps. They they recover from this attack by the landlord, and they throw like an army's worth. It's like a literal like army of the dead flies out of the harp. And all of a sudden, again, the landlady just appears out of nowhere in front of her husband, takes a huge breath in on her cigarette, and then
the whole thing ashes. She just like she just smokes the whole cigarette right in one.
And then lets out a huge scream.
Yeah.
And it like breaks all the glass. They go flying. Yeah. Like she's defeated them. And it turns out that the landlord and the landlady this whole time have also been kung fu masters. And she knows the lion's roar. This is like a move.
Yeah.
And they can't defeat her. And she basically is like, you don't come to my house and start making a mess. This ends now. So they just keep appearing places. So they're watching this fight, the gang boss, and then they turn around and the landlord is in the front seat with the driver, and he just has his arm around the driver.
Yeah.
And by the time they realize that, they turn around and the landlady's in the car with them. And then she has another cigarette that he tries to light, but he's shaking now and he can't light it.
Yeah.
And she silently, she doesn't say a word, she just points at him. Points at the neighborhood, shakes her finger no, and then like runs her finger across her throat like,
you're
dead if you ever try this again. And the gang boss just shakes his head and agrees.
I haven't seen it, but I watched, you sent me the fight. Is this like the finale or is this?
No, it's
towards the middle of the film.
Midway through the movie.
Okay, so there's still more fun to happen.
There's more fun. There's a lot more fun.
I gotta check it out. It was really, I really enjoyed it. Wow, that's cool. I remember hearing about it, and it's like, it's funny. There's a lot of films from like the early 2000s that I don't know what I was doing.
This
just
is
being
really
in my 20s.
Time for movies. There was a lot of really fun stuff that came out. We rewatched the entire movie like a week ago.
Okay.
And it holds up. Like the effects don't really hold up. Like the CGI doesn't look great, but the cartoony stuff was sort of brilliant because that stuff doesn't have to hold up. It's meant to look like a Looney Tune. And it's very funny. Like, it's still very, very funny.
Yeah. I thought it was really good. Dread Pirate Roberts versus Inigo Montoya.
Oh, yeah.
So this is from The Princess Bride.
Can you do it in the Peter Falk voice?
I can only hold it for like 20 seconds.
You were so good, though.
I can't do it now. Now I'm shy.
You'd be like... We'd be like, Princess Buttercup.
As you wish.
There it is. Too many S's that he just smushes.
I've said it before. One of these days, I'm just going to make a new podcast called...
Columbo.
How About Them Shoes?
Oh, yeah. there a Columbo podcast?
There's many.
Oh, there are many? Okay.
The amount of podcasts there are in the world... Also, if you look at how many podcasts were started during the pandemic, oh boy, we're a tiny fish in a big, big sea.
Oh, man. But you know, I learned the statistic today. 70% of podcasts have one episode.
Exactly. We're almost at 200.
Mm-hmm.
So The Princess Bride. So this is, I'm not going to explain The Princess Bride to you, I feel. I feel like we've seen it.
I'm above that.
Yeah. You know what? Listener, you're above that, so I'm not going to insult you. But this is the scene where they really meet each other. Inigo's on the top of the mountain. Dread Pirate Roberts, played by Cary Elwes, is climbing up the mountain. And he's like, I'm sick of waiting. Can I just throw you a rope? And he's like, I don't trust you. You're going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I promise, I swear on the life of my father, you'll get to the top. Mm-hmm. So he throws him the rope. He climbs up. He's like, okay, should we start? He's like, no, take a break. You know, wait until you're ready. And he tells him the story about the six-fingered man. Mm-hmm. This is when, you know, and it's all great. You've got Mandy Patinkin being charming.
Love him.
You've got that.
It's like him at his best. He's so good.
You've got that beautiful
score. And he's
score.
Great to begin with.
Like, no, he's so soulful as a human being.
Yeah.
And he's so great in that role. And you've got that beautiful score. And then, you know, the cliff that they're on, it feels like a set in the best way. There's a sort of like fairy tale storybook artifice to that movie.
Mm.
And So he tells the, you know, the story of the six-figured man, and he kills his father, and he's been looking for the six-figured man. We really learn what
the character... He checks his hands.
Yeah. Right. He says, do you happen to have six fingers on your right hand? And he's like, no.
No,
he shows
babe.
Him the sword. He shows him his father's sword.
What if he was in Gravity Falls?
Oh, okay. That took me a second.
Sorry. I'm in the middle of a rewatch.
Good for you. And then they fence. It's a fencing fight.
It's great.
And you know, but so it's not the most action-y fight, but mm-hmm. it's all sold by their performance and the charm of it all and sound effects, really. The clank, 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 clank mm-hmm. is all sound.
Oh, this is what you meant by the dialogue.
Yeah, because it's all them talking. They're both doing it left-handed, mm-hmm. and they're talking about fencing. He's like, you're using this defense. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, well, if the only way to counteract that is use this. Well, I decided to do this, given the rocky terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And, what do you call it? Inigo Montoya says, I admit it, you're better than me, but I know something you don't know. I'm not left-handed. And then he throws his sword to the right hand, and mm-hmm. then he gets the upper hand. He sort of brings him up the mountain, mm-hmm. you know, leading him.
To the counter.
Yeah, and he's
neither
like...
Neither am I.
He switches to his right hand, and then he's winning. There's that conveniently placed, like, rope that they, like, do somersaults off of.
On a... mountaintop.
Right, sure.
It feels like a stage play.
Yeah, really, yeah, does. Yeah. Dread Pirate Robert throws his sword down mm-hmm. and it lands in the ground mm-hmm. and then he flips like three times over, mm-hmm. does a somersault, stands, grabs his sword.
They're both in very blousy outfits.
Yeah.
Like it feels, I think, intentionally like an Errol Flynn
yeah,
movie.
It's very yeah. much like that. And you can see that they respect each other. It's character development through a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're basically the two leads, and they're meeting in the scene, mm-hmm. and they're fighting, but...
I feel like they're falling in love with each other.
Yeah, like they're getting a lot of respect for one another.
They grow to like each other as much as we like them.
Yeah, yeah.
Throughout the course of this fight.
Yeah, and in the end, he bests Inigo, and Inigo's like, just kill me fast, and he's like, I wouldn't kill you.
No sooner would I like destroy a painting, like yeah. a masterpiece.
He's like, but I can't have you follow me, so he just knocks him out.
Yeah, he's like, bye.
But
he's like, you're way too good for me to take you out of this world. There's
yeah,
no way.
Yeah, it is. It's a love scene. It's two guys becoming the best of friends.
Really, it really is. It's so charming. They're both so good in it. They're both so charming. Individually, yeah. and then to have them act off each other is yeah. so cool. I love that fight.
And they, you know, they learn who each other are through the fight, mm-hmm. and they learn neither of them is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of them have good intentions.
Yeah, they're both good guys, yeah.
Right, because then the next time they meet is later on in the story where Inigo is like, we need help, we should find the man in black.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to find him, and he saves him.
Mm-hmm. And they start off the fight not trusting each other, but by the end of the fight, they trust each other, which is interesting.
And it's very honorable because he throws him the rope, and he even like gives him his sword to check out his father's work. Mm-hmm. And like, Dread Pirate could have just killed him right there. He gave him his weapon, but he doesn't because they don't start until they say, okay, we are officially going to start mm-hmm. fighting now.
Yeah, it's very gentlemanly.
It is. Yeah, it's very gentlemanly. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's great.
It's a great fight.
Side note, did you ever see that clip of like Mandy Patinkin on like... Good Morning America,
oh my God, yes! Or whatever. Like, where the guy had a runoff because his wife was having a baby.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to talk
like,
about
oh
his
my
show
God,
anymore.
Mazel Tov. He's like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and they're like, so tell us more about your show. He's like, I don't care about my
Who
show.
Who cares? The guy's having a baby. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you know what he did after that?
No.
He sent a gift to that guy for his baby, and it was like a silver engraved cup.
Of course.
With like.
He's a beautiful soul.
The best
soul.
Wishes to you. And he's like, he's the classiest act.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you hear so much about Mandy Patinkin being like difficult on set.
Yeah.
And it seems like everybody loves him, but he's often very hard to work with because he holds himself to a crazy high standard.
Yeah.
So like, he's not raging at people. He's always just like, I can't do it because I'm not perfect right now.
Right. I've heard that.
And
I've heard that.
It makes it very difficult to produce a show in like a time frame.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess he did Homeland. You know, he was on that for a long time.
I don't remember
what
it was.
He seems so warm.
No, he does. He seems like... I heard him on WTF with Marc Maron, and he was talking... He was talking about depression, which I didn't know he had.
Mm.
And he's just super warm. He seems to really love his wife.
Mm.
He seems to just really love his family. He's just like an awesome like guy.
Mm.
So that's mine.
Aw, Mandy. Okay. So, all right. I'm going to do this one because, and I'll just talk about it briefly because this is going long, but this is the fight.
It's fine.
This is 25 hours. This is the fight that they used to show on the TVs at Best Buy to show off the HD quality.
Okay.
Do you know this one? Because at the time, everyone was going to Best Buy all the time for everything.
No, when you say that, all I think about is a bird flying onto like a daisy. And
they used to play this fight on repeat. And I think it was when Bill was working at Best Buy, because I'd like just pop in and like say hi.
No.
I'd see it all the time. It's the Peter Jackson King Kong versus T-Rex fight.
Ooh.
And I love this fight. I love it so much.
It's the best part of that movie.
It is the best part of that movie. I'm sorry to say it. No. So it's a great fight.
Yeah.
It is a gigantic King Kong versus a full-on T-Rex dinosaur. Yeah. it looked very good, especially at the time. It looked fantastic.
Yeah. And it's a good update of the scene from the original King Kong.
From the original,
It's basically the same scene.
Right, except it's just, you know, it's fast. They're really coming at each other crazy. And then just it's a really fun fight to watch. I'm sure you can just pop it on.
Did you see Kong Skull Island?
No.
It's so good.
Is it?
It's really, really good.
Captain Marvel in it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's part of that series, but you don't need to.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
A sequel?
No. It's not a sequel. I mean, it's part of the legendary series, like Godzilla, Kong Skull Island, Godzilla King of the Monos, and then Kong versus.
Is it the new one that just came out? The Kong.
That's part of the series.
Okay.
But Kong Skull Island, other than a Godzilla mention in like a post-credit scene, it's basically just a King Kong movie.
Okay.
And he fights all sorts of weird monsters in that.
Love it. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a big monster fight. It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty awesome. And he breaks his jaw, right? That's his move.
He rips his face open, basically. Yeah. Like, he just, like, opens his mouth too far and just pops his head like that.
Yeah, you know, I feel like that movie could have been really great if they didn't give Peter Jackson, like, carte blanche to do whatever the fuck he wants. And like,
you need to have like edited him back a little bit. 25 minutes of like going through the jungle with giant bugs.
It's so in love with the original King Kong, and it's so in love with it. So, like, that's why I love Skull Island, because it's like, it just knows what it is. It's like, you want to see a big giant gorilla fuck shit up?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yes. And that's what this movie really should have been.
Right. It's the best part of the movie.
That fight is what you want from a King Kong movie. Right. The fight is fantastic. I really don't care if you take away from this that you should watch the movie. You shouldn't. Maybe you should. It's extremely long. It's very, very long.
It is long.
It's like 3 hours.
It's not bad. It's not. Much like the original King Kong, it takes way too long to get to King Kong.
Yeah.
To start doing. Like, you're following the filmmaker, and it's like,
I know.
Let's just get there and do this.
And it's Jack Black.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't dislike Jack Black at all. But like, he's delivering the line at the end where it's like, it's true, 'twas beauty killed the beast. And it's just a Jack Black line delivery.
Do you think they did like 1,000 takes of that? Like every different way? Like, because that's such a, you have to do it because that's the famous line from the movie. Yeah. But also, you've got a comedian doing it. So right off the bat, you've got a comedian who we are used to laughing at doing a line that's pretty corny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I can't imagine directing that line.
I felt like he was going to jump in the air when he was doing it.
I know.
Like he's going to do his like Tenacious D stuff.
Like do an air guitar.
Yeah. But King Kong versus the T-Rex. This is a great fight. That's fantastic.
Rocky 2, Rocky versus Apollo Creed.
I was waiting for which Rocky fight you were going to do.
I think it's the best Rocky fight.
I think you're probably right. It's not my favorite, but I think it is the best. My favorite is the Drago fight. I love Drago.
I understand, but I think
you are right, though. I think it
narratively,
is the best
it's the
fight.
Most is at stake. Because it's the first movie happens.
He got lucky.
Right.
Now he has to prove himself.
Right. It's a Cinderella story, right? He doesn't win in the first movie, but he only loses by decision. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Apollo Creed, who's supposed to be based on Muhammad Ali, is basically like the best fighter in the world. And he just picks a nobody to fight as like a stunt. And then that person actually like really gives him a good fight.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, you know, in part two, Rocky becomes like famous because of this, and like Apollo's fans kind of turn on him and they're like, wow, he really kicked your ass. Mm-hmm. Like, so now Apollo's like, in the first one, Apollo just treated it all as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, whatever. Like halfway through the fight, he sort of realizes that Rocky's really trying.
Yeah.
But in part two, he's like so angry.
Yeah.
He's like, I gave you a chance, and then you we were supposed to give him a show, and you like, I think they say in the first movie, like, he thinks this is a fight and it's just a show.
Yeah.
So he's super, super angry at Rocky, and Rocky's like, this is my second big shot.
Yeah.
And he just had the kid and he got married. And it's just brutal. It's just like, you know, hit after hit. Like, in real life, they would stop it, like, after, mm-hmm. like, 10 minutes because they just, like, are murdering each other. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, they're just immediately going after each other's faces. And Apollo, like, beats the shit out of Rocky's face. And Rocky beats the shit out of Apollo's ribs. Yeah, and sides. Like, and it's just, like, fucking ridiculous. And then it ends in that really interesting way of, like, saying who has the most heart, because at the end they're just like both like zombies, like barely standing, and they're just like trading punches. And then Rocky knocks out Apollo, but he slips when he does that, so they're both on the ground. The ref is counting to 10 and they're both trying to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically like whoever can actually get on their feet has more heart. Mm-hmm. and Rocky does it.
Yeah.
And Rocky wins and he becomes the heavyweight champion, and that's when Rocky becomes the champion. And that's, you know, the rest of the movies are like fucking superhero movies at that point. The reality goes away.
It just diminishes.
It just becomes Rocky's a superhero.
Yeah. I feel like they tried. It's funny. You could see just in the course of like 4 movies, right? Mm. Because I refuse to acknowledge 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
6 is really good.
6 is good.
Yeah, yeah.
5. He's dead now, isn't he, Tommy Gunn?
Yeah, he died in real life.
A lot of people in that movie died. Like, everybody.
Well, Burgess Meredith was like 102.
Yes, I agree with you. I feel like the Rocky movies get more fun as they go on.
Yeah.
But they're not. And then they kind of scale it back. Like, I feel like the first half of 4 is going like as big as they can go with it, like with the Apollo fight. And then when he is killed in the fight, spoiler alert, they scale it back. Like, that's when like Rocky goes to the wilderness, then like they pare down everything. And it feels like they're trying to go back to making it a little bit more gritty, and then they go all the way back and they just repeat the first movie in 5. And like, she goes back to working in the pet shop.
Yeah, it's a weird and it also has like a hip-hop score. Yeah, but
we're not
have
here
seen
to
the,
talk about.
Seen the Creed movies?
I haven't seen. Oh no, I've seen Creed. Right,
the first Creed's really good. The second one's not bad, but the first one's really good.
Is it the actress who played his wife in the movies?
No, that woman died as well. But it's Felicia Rashad.
Oh, it's Felicia Rashad. Right. That's it.
But she was like Creed's like mistress.
She's Creed's wife, and that she's talking to him.
No, because he doesn't even know
he has Apollo Creed's son,
and
yeah.
She like finds.
But wait, does she have that line? Because she's like taking care. I thought it was his wife was just like taking care of this kid because she was doing right by him in the way that he would have wanted to do right by this kid. Oh. Because she has this line where she's like, you didn't see what I saw. Like, you didn't see after the fights. She has this amazing line that I always think about when I watch these movies. She's like, I used to have to help him wipe his ass after a fight because he couldn't do it because his fingers were so fucked up.
Oh, maybe it was supposed to be his wife.
So it was like, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. the original actress passed away.
Okay. Yeah, the first Creed is, from what I've seen, is really good.
And
what's her face is in it?
There's a fight in that's one shot. That's pretty amazing.
Hmm.
The fights in the early Rockies are very, like, by contemporary movie standards, like, very staged. Like, you often see that they're not really hitting. It's just, whereas, like, now they do hit, or, you know, it looks much more realistic now. But still, I feel like it works. Hmm. And, that's... Right away, I thought that's the best Rocky fight, I think.
Yeah.
It's the most dramatic.
Right. Absolutely. I like the fight at the end of 3, where he's like, ding, ding.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That just turns into passionate lovemaking the minute the
camera's
off.
You know it does. You know it does. And that's another thing where people coming to respect each other through the course of a fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They become best friends.
Yes, yeah,
they really do. They love each other.
The chest bump, the chest bump in the ocean.
They love each other so much. Yeah, I know. They really do. I love them.
It's like stepbrothers. Like, wait, did we just become best friends?
We sure did. And I feel like that, the Clever Lang, I always go by the main fighter in the movie, right? So it's like the Apollo movies, the Clever Lang movies, the Drago movies. Because isn't there like a Drago character in the second Creed movie?
Yeah, it's Drago's son.
It's Drago's son with Brigitte Nielsen.
Oh, shit, is she in it?
I don't think she'd be in it, but like it would be that character.
No, I think she might
be in it. She's in it?
She might be in it. I might have just completely imagined that.
Is Dolph Lundgren in it?
No, he's definitely in it. He's like in it for real. He's like, because he's the son's manager. He's like trains. Like there's a good scene. He actually speaks more in Creed 2 than any. He has like no dialogue in Rocky 4. Yeah, but he like. There's a scene where he like.
I say that, by the way. I promise I'm a good mom. But I say that sometimes if like Peter is crying about something, I'm like, if he cries, he cries.
No, there's a scene where he like goes to an old Rocky and he's like, you know, going.
Oh, yeah, they talk to each other. Like, hey, remember when I killed your best friend?
He's like, yeah, he's like, you know, going back to the Soviet Union after losing to you was pretty horrible. Like, my life was a real nightmare.
I was in a gulag.
I lost everything. Like, it's like, it's interesting.
Wow. They speak to, I have to see this now because that's really interesting that they would get into that.
Yeah, no, they do. Yeah, it's interesting.
Oh, man. Well, you pointed out to me the first time we watched it, like, look at him. They're bringing him out. Like, he doesn't like the lights. Like, he's Frankenstein.
He's a monster.
Yeah, he's a literal monster. Like, he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, I know. He is, you know, Soviet man. He is built.
Oh, he's like God status. I know the famous story of casting him. He came into the room and Sylvester Stallone was like, oh, he's too perfect. I want to kick his ass.
I never heard that.
Yeah, it's basically like, I want to punch him in the face. He's so perfect.
I heard another good story where Stallone visited the set of Masters of the Universe.
Oh.
And he saw Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. Mm. And he said to the director, you gave him lines? And, you know, as much as I love He-Man, he could barely get those lines out in that movie.
I know.
Anyway.
Oh, I love him.
The director of that movie turned out to be a pedophile. So
So
fuck that guy.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. It really ruins one of my childhood memories.
That's a lot. Well, that's a good guy. The principle of in Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
And then it's like, why do you want Ferris so bad?
When you go back and watch it's very weird.
Why'd you stay away from that kid?
The very last scene where he goes into the school bus is like, do not let that man on the school bus. Oh boy. So what do you got?
Okay. So this is going to be my fifth one and I actually had to make a decision.
So do your honorable mentions.
I'm going to do my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do this is the not a fight really. It's more of a chase. It's
sure.
From the Rian Johnson movie Brick,
which I'm so the Rian Johnson like cheerleader of this podcast and I haven't seen this film.
It's great.
Totally missed it. I barely heard about it.
Yeah. It's
what was I doing?
It's a high school noir. It's great. It stars Joseph Gordon.
So it's like a proto Knives Out.
It's very much yes. He likes that genre.
Yeah.
Because it's a detective film.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's cool. He's not a hall monitor. I want to call him a hall monitor, but he's just like he's a student, and the principal recruits him. He's like something's going down in the school. There's some drugs or whatever. That's the plot. That's the dialogue. There's some drugs or whatever. Find it out.
Sure.
I don't want to spoil this movie for you, but it's not a spoiler really, but like it hits all the beats of noir. So he goes to see like who would be the cabaret performer
the
smoky nightclub, but it's just like a girl who does drama. And so she's in the theater department and she's like sitting in front of one of those vanity mirrors and it's great. In any event, Joseph Gordon-Levitt throughout the movie wears these hard-soled shoes. They're like dress shoes, but he's wearing them with like jeans and it looks odd. It looks a little out of place. It's a little old-fashioned. But they make a very loud clicking noise when he walks, always.
Yeah.
And the sound design is so important in this movie. There are other fights in the movie and the fights are really good. You know, parking lot fights and stuff. But there's this one scene where some thug from the the crime boss's gang. He's like waiting on a response from the crime boss, and he's like, what's his answer? He sees this guy walking towards him, and then the guy just pulls a knife, and he's like, oh shit. So instead of like fighting him, he takes off running, which is a smart thing to do. He doesn't, you know, has a weapon as far as we know. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt can run. Like, he's a very fast runner. So it's like a very fast running sequence. They're running. He's being chased. And the whole time you're just hearing the sound of his shoes, like click, click, click on the hard pavement.
Yeah.
And they're running down these like long, long outdoor, like indoor, outdoor corridors. Mm-hmm. And he rounds a corner and he knows he doesn't have much time. So he like, he rounds a corner. He kicks his shoes off so the guy can't hear him. And then runs and slides out in front of the guy as he's running to round the corner and trips him. And the guy goes flying and knocks himself out.
Right.
Basically.
And it makes like a bell noise.
Bing. When his head hits a pole. Yeah.
Very
cool. And I've always loved that sequence. And it's not really a fight, but it's just very clever.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have one, but we didn't do any Star Wars lightsaber fights.
I have one.
You have one. Okay, so then I'm going to save this, and we'll talk about that with yours. And then the other honorable mention for me is a beating. It's not really... It's just a beating.
What is it?
Is it... I never remember his name. Is it Carlo or Carmine? It's Sonny from The Godfather.
Carlo.
It's Carlo. Beating Carlo.
Yeah. Sonny beats the shit.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's great. He fucking takes the stickball bat from the kids.
He's holding on to the like metal he and bites his hand. Yeah. It's such a dirty fight. He beats the ever loving crap. He throws a garbage can on top of him.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He beats the crap out of him. And so the context is Carlo is married to Sonny's sister.
Yeah.
And he goes to visit his sister and sees that she's all beat up. She's got a bruised face. And he doesn't even say anything to her. He just like bites his fist and leaves. Mm-hmm. And she knows like, oh no.
Yeah.
Sonny's a hothead. He's going to do something bad. She's screaming like, don't hurt him. Don't hurt him. And the next scene is just these kids are playing. It's The Godfather. You've probably seen it. But these kids are playing in a fire hydrant outside. Like the street is crowded. It's a hot summer day. And he's hanging out with his friends. And Sonny just rolls up and runs out of the car and just beats the shit out of him.
And he runs away from Sonny.
Yes, he keeps running away. And Sonny's like, get over here.
And there's a pretty obvious like missed shot too in it where Sonny like swings way, doesn't hit him at all, but he reacts. And that's what gets Sonny killed, because that's when he turns sets up Sonny to get killed.
Yeah, he dies because of that fight. Well, that beating. I will never forget it. I had seen it before, but they showed it in our film 101 class. I was watching it with a bunch of people who had never seen The Godfather before. Mm. And when this scene came on, people were shouting, cheering, whooping. They were just having the time of their lives watching this.
It's also like great because it's like the just the city, like there's kids playing.
Yeah,
there's
no one fucking getting involved. There's a fire. Don't get involved.
Right.
Like this is between them. Yeah. It's so good.
There's an open fire hydrant.
Yeah,
hydrant.
The water is everywhere. It's just chaos as well.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. As an honorable mention is a beating.
Sure.
So then it's not my number one, but it is the one. Another movie theater experience. I've never experienced.
So, or is this your last on
this
your
is my
list?
My last one.
Okay.
Do you want to do your honorable mentions first?
Okay, sure.
Okay, all right, and then we'll talk about the last ones.
Okay, my honorable mentions. One is Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh my God.
Jason versus Julius.
Yes.
Julius fights Jason on a rooftop, boxes him. It's basically a beautiful joke. It's a long setup to a perfect punchline. Jason just stands there as Julius just boxes him, and his hands are getting bloody as he's hitting Jason's mask, and Jason is just taking every hit, and Julius is just talking all this shit, and then he's just like, Jason's not going down, and he's just like, fuck you, and then Jason just punches his head off. His head goes off.
Clean
and it's
off his body.
It is gorgeous. The other one, and this is just, it's like 2 seconds, is McGonagall versus Snape.
When this is a good one.
They're in the... They're
but I
in,
feel like he's pulling his punches.
Right, because he's... He also deflects her shots to kill the Death Eaters behind him. So, but he takes out his wand to like, you think, to attack Harry. But before he even gets his wand out, McGonagall has her wand out and she hits him a few times.
Yeah, she jumps in front. And that was like, huge, in the theater,
people lost their shit at that.
Because we're like, oh my God, we're going to see McGonagall fight.
Yeah.
And like,
and she's so ready with it.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
Oh, I would say in that, see, I want to do another list now. I would do the Dumbledore Voldemort fight.
There's a lot of great Harry Potter ones. A lot of great Harry Potter. I just, that one stands out to me as like one of the biggest cheers in a movie theater.
Yes. Okay. All right. So like, this is also,
people lost their shit.
People, yeah. I love the movie theater reaction because so often, I don't know, especially now, like you miss like participating in a film. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like the audience aspect of a film really heightens your experience of the movie. Like, absolutely. I've seen these things at home and it does not pack the same punch.
No, at all. No.
And I often wonder with some movies that I've only seen at home, like, what would that have been like in a theater? That probably would have been fun.
Right.
And sometimes you can go to like an outdoor movie if they're like re-showing it, and it does, like The Warriors, right?
Yeah.
The Warriors movie I'd only ever seen on home video. And then I got to see it at an outdoor showing. And when, it's like one of the characters is basically surrounded.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the Warriors show up. Yeah, Everyone cheered. Yeah, and it was like, oh man, this is something.
It's so awesome. Yeah.
You know, it's such a great experience. So I will say that for the last fight that I'll talk about. I've never in my life ever. And I mean, I'm talking about the, was it Attack of the Clones, like Yoda fighting for the first time. People used to go nuts in the theater. Like, I've had big reactions in movie theaters. Never in my life have I seen a reaction to a fight like this.
Yeah.
Ever. Okay. The Borat Azamat fight.
Yes.
In Borat.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Two naked men.
Yes. Not faked in any way. These men are naked.
These men are fully naked. One of them is very overweight and old. And
just to be clear, this is not an honorable mention.
This is the fight.
This is the number one on your list.
This is not number one. I did not rank them, but you know what?
Your number one sexual fantasy.
the things Sacha Baron Cohen will do for his art.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
He had that man's entire butt in his face. In any event, they are chasing each other through a hotel. They are fighting. They are encountering real guests of the hotel as they are chasing each other. They are tackling each other to the ground. They are beating each other with a sex toy. It is unreal. You know, they run into a ballroom, like a crowded ballroom at the hotel. And it's just like, it's a wild fight. And it's not even like a great fight. They're just attacking each other. Of course, it's stopped by hotel security, who probably really hurt both of them.
It's the most uproarious laughter.
Yes. Yes.
I've ever been a part of.
Yes. So I've never, ever seen a theater response like I did to this fight in particular. People were standing up. And I told Bill this when I was talking about this fight. And I was like, have you ever heard the term rolling in the aisles?
Yeah.
A man was literally on the floor rolling back and forth with laughter. Like, convulsing with laughter at this fight, and he was rolling in the aisle. Like, people were literally rolling in the aisles at this fight. I could not believe what I was seeing, both on screen and in front of me in the theater.
Yeah.
I felt like they turned up the lights or something, because I could see everybody. And it was, everyone was just like up in the air. They were standing, howling with laughter.
Yes.
And it was a fight, which is, it's just.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it goes into the elevator. It goes.
But it doesn't go on too long, I think. They kind of, because then once they reach the conference
room, because it's so ridiculous.
It's done.
You rarely see male nudity, full male nudity like that in a film. And it's played for laughs. And you never see a guy with a body like, what's his real name is Ken Davishian.
I don't know if this is before or after Eastern Promises came out, or like around the same time, but there's a very like famous Viggo Mortensen naked steam room fight, and it's brutal, and it is the opposite of this fight, but it's just like male nudity. It's like when you're most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And now you're in a fight.
The fight begins because he catches him jerking off to his magazine, Pamela Anderson, who he's in love
with. He's in love with, yeah.
Wow.
Yes. It's just, and they're like grabbing each other by the genitals to like hurt each other. It's just,
it's wild.
It's a nuts fight. It really is crazy. And that's my favorite fight.
That's fantastic. Side note, do you remember when we saw Hairspray and some man, like, he, like, broke his ankle, like, in hair, and then just, like, screaming.
He was moaning, and I don't know if it was one of us, but somebody shushed him. Somebody went, shh.
He was just screaming in pain.
I remember, I think we thought, like, something was up, and, like, he wasn't legitimately hurt.
It was weird.
Okay. All right. To contextualize this a little bit, we went to see Hairspray. A guy fell, I guess, but it didn't look like anything really happened. But then he was just lying on the ground making noises and like moaning and stuff. And we thought maybe he was crazy. And like we didn't want to go near him because we were like maybe a little afraid that he would do something. We weren't sure what was happening. Somebody shushed him in the theater.
That's fantastic.
And then I guess somebody must have gone to like get help and been like, somebody fell. So we just go help him. So at no point did we leave our seats. At no point did anybody, like, stop the movie. EMTs arrived, put this man on a stretcher, and removed him from the theater, and we never left.
Yeah.
We were just like, okay.
You can't stop the beat.
You know, you couldn't. You really couldn't.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable. I tell this to Phil all the time. I'm like, that was the weirdest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, it was super weird. Okay. So my last one.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will say, I guess mine is kind of right. This is number one on my list. Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader, The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, Empire. Okay, okay.
The Empire Strikes Back.
The one where he loses his hand at the end.
The one where it ends with him revealing that he's his father.
That's the one. And then Luke jumps to his death, he thinks.
Yeah.
Like, just commits suicide at the end.
Yeah.
But doesn't. He survives.
You know, you have the first movie. It's incredible. But the good guy and the bad guy don't fight. Other than, like, you've got Obi-Wan fighting Darth Vader, and you've got Darth Vader in his TIE fighter, like, shooting at Luke.
Mm.
But
yeah, it's weird considering they didn't go into it thinking there would be a sequel.
Right. So it's
having them fight.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like
sort of rare in a movie like that.
Right. Because when you watch the first movie, you don't feel like it's missing.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you do get to it in the second movie, it is like a holy shit. The good guy and the bad guy are going to have a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, Darth Vader knows that Luke's his son. Luke doesn't know that.
Mm.
Luke has been lured there, but he knows he's been lured there as a trap. Mm. They don't know what to expect of each other. There's that famous shot of them in silhouette where they're in the dark and you see the red of his blade and the blue of Luke's blade.
Mm.
They fight. It's narrative. They're talking the whole way through. Mm. Luke falls into the carbon chamber. He jumps out before Vader can do anything. That's what Vader says, most impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can tell he's sort of like proud of him.
Yeah. They lose track of each other at one point and they're like in that weird corridor and it's like very like horror movie because Luke's like doesn't know where he is and then Vader comes out of nowhere and you just hear the sound of his voice and it's like almost like a jump scare and then they're fighting there and then Vader's using the Force on him and that's really one of the first times you see the Force used that way. Like, earlier in the film, he uses the Force to grab the lightsaber. But Vader's, like, using the Force to, like, throw shit at him.
Mm.
And then they're on that weird, like, whatever the fuck that is. Like, in the bottom of the city where, like, basically he, like, corners Luke to Luke's, like, stuck on that thing.
There's so many tiny, narrow bridges.
Yeah.
In all these crafts.
Sure. Absolutely.
Space stations.
And, He makes Luke the offer, like, join me.
Do you feel like he went into the fight thinking, like, if he's shitty at fighting, like, I'm not even going to tell him. I'm just going to kill him. Just be done with it. But he's so good. He's like, all right, you're in.
I think that's an interesting question. I think he thinks he's
good.
Like,
how much is left of him?
It's so hard to not let contemporary canon inform pepper the way I read it because like now like there's been so much other stuff to fill it in and like now the official canon is like he wanted to kill the Emperor and he had this plan to get Luke to help him and all this stuff so it's like you don't know how much
I've never believed him in that moment. I've never trusted him in that moment.
No, I think I do trust him.
You do? Because
I think it's like when in episode 3 he says to Padme, join me and we can rule together.
Mm. But I know, but that's after, right? Like that's
right. Of course, right. That's made later. Mm. I guess I always did believe it. I don't think he was going to kill him. I don't think he wants to kill him.
I don't think he wants to kill him either. But I think he just gave that to him as like a carrot. Like right. Here,
I don't think he would have really ruled. I think the Emperor would have just used him as a tool. Just like he used
Vader. I think Vader is very much locked in like an abusive relationship with the Emperor, and that there was no way in hell he was ever really going to kill him. He was just like, come on, come with me, we'll be good.
Right.
Kind of.
Right.
Like, and just to get Luke onto his side, and then, you know, then, oh, well, you'll just be doing bad stuff for a little while, and then we'll really get have to, you know, and then eventually he's also locked into the same pattern. Yeah,
it's a multi-level marketing scheme.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. Man. I poured over Star Wars and all the different fights in Star Wars, and there's so many good fights. There's good fights in Mandalorian. You said, and the Luke Vader fight at the end, the Jedi, is also really good. Mm-hmm. But I think, to me, this is like the most iconic.
What I almost put on the list was the Kylo Ren, Rey team up against the Praetorian
Guard.
That
almost made my list as well.
It's very good. It's what I wanted to see when these two characters were introduced. Like, I like that they fought each other. But I wanted them to join forces. And I thought, like, okay, now is the point where we're going to move forward and we're going to have, like, some, like, gray.
Right. It begins with him killing Snoke. So it's like, narratively, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. You think that Kylo is flipping.
Yes.
And you also know he really cares about Rey now because he saves Rey.
Yes. They are amazing together.
And it's beautifully choreographed. You see it all. It's none of that Michael Bay.
In white and black, and everything else is red.
Right.
It's so and they're like, visually interesting. It's very
cool. The way that they are communicating with each other is so, like, they have such a connection. Like, they're throwing things to each other. They've perfectly, like, in sync with each other.
Yeah.
It's so good. And then it ends with them both reaching for the lightsaber and being equally matched and ripping the lightsaber in half, which would have been a beautiful metaphor for the end of the patriarchal power of the Skywalker family. But then J.J. Abrams had them put it back together.
But Ryan Johnson sort of did too. Like, I feel like he didn't commit in that moment at the end. I feel like it would have been so much more interesting if not. I didn't want Kylo Ren necessarily to become good, right? In that moment. Because I feel like that's the obvious choice. Right. Like, he redeemed himself. Now he's good. Now we're going to all be happy in the third movie. But I feel like it could have been much more interesting if they either...
Yeah.
Because she's like... Because they get to that point, right? Yeah. Like, they go through all this stuff. There is that narrativity to this fight where they didn't trust each other, but they do have this strong connection. Now they trust each other.
I'm so sorry.
Stop trying to watch YouTube videos while I'm talking. It's very disrespectful.
You were really boring. Sorry, go on.
They do have this connection, as you were saying, and then they end up in the same place where they started. That's one of my biggest critiques.
Yeah, well, but that movie. He has that whole thing where he's like, forget the Jedi, forget the Sith. We'll do something different.
Yeah, but I'm still bad, though. Like, I'm still going to let your friends die, and we're not going to save them. Like, I'm the same person that I was basically going into this fight, and so were you. I wanted them to create like this nuanced way of looking at the Force where they both still had a lot of work to do. And then the third movie, they're just in therapy the whole time. Or when he offers his hand to her and he says, join me, she accepts.
Yeah.
And then the third movie is Finn's movie because they're fucked because they have Rey and Kylo Ren against them. And now they like have it's like this insurmountable thing.
But Ryan Johnson's movie was over. They didn't. You tried and they didn't.
I really tried a lot.
All right, fantastic. This is the list that we have. I'm sure I'll think of more things.
Oh, yeah. I thought of more things during the course of this episode.
Right, me too. Yeah, I mean, there's whole thing, you know, there's fights. There's a million other fights in Harry Potter. There's a million other fights in... you know, there's fights of the Lord of the Rings movies that are really good. Mm. There's, you know, just like, and then just genre alone. There are kung fu movie fights that are great. Or like, you know, like 80s, you know, meathead movie fights.
You
like,
just do Arnold Schwarzenegger
We haven't done
fights.
Any, we didn't do any Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger versus the fucking Predator is great.
Well, Fast and the Furious movies. There are some fights in those, I think. They fight with cars. Or like if you did like a kaiju movie.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, there's so much. Yeah, but this was great.
I'm so glad we did this. I'm so glad we didn't fight.
We could fight now, I mean, if you want.
We've just been passive aggressively fighting each other this whole time.
This whole time, meaning our whole
and
lives.
And then we were talking about like how should we count like arguments?
Yeah,
like people just screaming at each other, like
marriage
best
story.
Yeah, marriage story. Either way, Adam Driver ends up on the list.
Yeah, yeah. We had a lot of conversations on the way to make this episode. Before we end, let me say that PCMC comes out every Wednesday. If you're new to the show, please go up and look at the Starter Pack episode. It's a great place to get into the show. And then look through our library and look for topics of things that you find interesting. We come out every Wednesday. I've got another plug. My friend Anchor Pete, who was on this podcast talking about Power Rangers comics recently, he has a YouTube channel, Anchor Pete, and I've been working with him to cover the High Republic Star Wars books. Right now we've got a video on Light of the Jedi, and we just on May 4th, Star Wars Day, released another video of Justina Ireland's A Test of Courage. So more Star Wars content. And if you're dying, if you're anything like me, when you listen to a podcast long enough, you then are dying to see what the podcaster actually looks like, to see if they look like the thing in your head.
They typically have a face for podcasts.
Yeah.
We are no different.
So if you're dying to see what I look like, check out these videos on Anchor Pete on YouTube. Janine, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.
Finish him.
Oh, no.